three prime homology flanking a selectable marker gene, and you're able to, in embryonic stem cells, you know, get corrected cells. It's not a very efficient process. It happens on the order of about 1 in a million. But it works. And we've been doing this for 25 years, making all sorts of knockouts and knock-ins. In human cells, in human iPS cells, in human ESLs, it hasn't worked so well. These same sort of targeting constructs are very inefficient, such that only a handful of genes using the old technology have been able to be modified in the human ESL. So newer gene correction methods with higher efficiencies are needed. So here's an example of a traditional targeting construct. This is some of my own work. So we work on the human beta globin gene, and we've been humanizing mice. So we've been replacing the mouse adult beta globin genes with human genes. So the human fetal gamma globin gene and the human adult beta gene. And we do that by supplying homology, that's 5' of where we want to insert the genes, and homology 3'. And we use a selectable marker gene, that's Flox by LoxP site, so we can remove it later. In doing this, at the mouse beta globin locus, we're able to insert the human fetal and beta gene. And by breeding these to a Cre mouse or transient expressing Cre recombinase in the embryonic stem cells, we can delete the marker gene, leaving this LoxP scar. And this would be our final knock-in. So we can do this in ESLs. This works in about 0.5% of our hygromycin-resistant colonies. For most genes of the mouse, that's a pretty low targeting efficiency. Again, that's about 1 in 20 million. Okay, at the mouse alpha globin locus, which we also target, we get about a 10% efficiency for the hygromycin selectable clones. So it's much more amenable. And now you can take these, make a mouse, breed it to the alpha knock-in, and we can get a fully humanized mouse. And I just note here that Mario Capecchi, Martin Evans, and Oliver Smithies were awarded the Nobel Prize for this technology in 2007. Okay, so in order to do this sort of targeting in human iPS cells or human ESLs, or in adult stem cells, say a hematopoietic stem cell, we're going to need much better efficiencies of gene targeting. And if you make a double-strand break in the DNA, that will greatly increase both homologous and non-homologous recombination. Double-strand breaks in the DNA are repaired in mostly in one of two ways, either by non-homologous end-joining or homology-directed repair. Briefly, so here's a sample gene that's been irradiated. You got a double-strand break in the DNA. You can take one of these two paths. So by non-homologous end-joining, you get a little processing of the ends, and they're ligated back together. This results in short insertions sometimes, but usually short deletions, or indels, if you combine the two, in the repaired DNA. The alternative is homology-directed repair. That if there is a piece of DNA that's homologous to this sequence, you can get some strand invasion and actual use of this DNA as a template to repair that lesion at the double-strand break. Okay, so that's homology-directed repair. That can either be, you know, a homologous gene that's in the system or DNA provided in trans, okay, in your experiment. All right, so these gene editing systems I'm going to talk about today all rely on synthetic endonuclease systems. I'll talk briefly about the zinc finger nucleases and the talons, but mostly focus on the CRISPR-Cas9 technology. So all three of these systems can efficiently create a double-strand break site-specifically in the DNA. And then that DNA can be repaired either by non-homologous end-joining, resulting in short indels, or homology-directed repair if you provide some homology. And say if you want to repair a mutant gene, you can supply homology of that gene of interest that's wild-type, and then you can fix the mutation. If anyone has questions as we go, feel free to ask. All right, so these synthetic DNA nucleases can generate double-strand breaks, come in two basic types, zinc finger nucleases, or ZFNs, and transcription activator-like effector nucleases, or TALEs. So the synthetic DNA binding portion of these are linked to a type 2S restriction energy nuclease, usually a FOP1. So you get this fusion protein. It's got DNA binding region from zinc fingers or talons linked to a restriction energy nuclease catalytic domain that will actually do the cleaving of the DNA. Okay, zinc finger proteins. Each finger recognizes several bases of DNA. It binds in the major groove. You can link up multiple fingers to recognize a string of DNA and make things highly specific. So if you combine four zinc fingers, each one recognizing three bases, you'll recognize a stretch of 12 base pairs. Okay. So there's a company out there called Sangamo who has libraries of multimerized fingers ready to go. So in short order, they can build up a synthetic zinc finger that will hopefully bind your DNA sequence. So they'll make these, you gotta test them. But you'll notice it's not a direct one for one. It's not one finger recognizes one base, but one finger recognizing three bases. This is the amino acid sequence of three fingers of the canonical ZIF-268 zinc finger that was Carl Pabo's lab. Work on this, and this was how he originated this technology of use of making ZFNs. Basically, there are six residues in this alpha helical region from -1, 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6. These are the important amino acids. Their side chains contact the DNA in the major group. There's six residues here contacting three bases. And it's not a one-for-one contact. But there's some inter and intra contacts between the fingers and DNA. So here's finger one that recognizes a GCG, but you'll see this aspartic acid here actually recognizes a base upstream. Similarly, this aspartic acid here recognizes the cytosine on the opposite strand. And this aspartic acid here has a contact with that adenine on the opposite strand. So it's not a straight, you can't just look at your sequence and come up with a zinc finger that will always work there. It's always important to have the contacts of these triplets in the DNA. So again, if you make enough of these things and test them, you'll find one that usually works pretty well. But just like all of these systems I'll talk about, there's always and opportunities for these things to recognize other sequences in the genome. Okay, these would be off-target sites, and you always have to worry about that for all three of these technologies. Now, to actually make the nuclease, again, you'll link up a series of the zinc fingers, in this case four, to the FOC1 catalytic domain, and you can make a second one here. So the one will bind sequence of DNA here, the other one will bind sequence here, the two FOC1s, it works as a dimer, they'll come together and form the catalytic nuclease and make a double strand break. Again, if you provide short homologies, you can actually repair that double strand break then with your DNA that you've provided. Otherwise, that double strand break will repair itself by non-homologous end-joining and result in an indel. All right, the transcription activator-like effectors, or when you add nuclease to the end of that, that's a TALEN. TALs were first discovered in a plant pathogen, the bacteria Xanthomonas. And this bacteria's evolved this system over time where it can inject the plant cells with these proteins, with a TAL. And these will go to the these proteins will go to the nucleus of the plant cell, bind to specific sequences in the promoters of plant genes, and either activate or suppress expression of those genes, allowing the pathogen to infect the plant more easily. Okay. So this system's been co-opted to use in mammalian cells. Basically, the system of the DNA binding portion of it is attained in these 34 amino acid repeat sequences. So every one of these colored boxes is a 34 amino acid sequence. Okay. Each one of these, depending on which base occurs at position 12 and 13, this is called the variable di residue, depending on those two amino acids determines which base it's going to recognize. So an asparagine glycine recognizes a thymine. So here in this particular repeat, this 34-mer, has an NG, which should recognize a T, and that's labeled a T. So using this system, you can dial in a specific DNA sequence, in this case, TTA, TTCCC, and just link up different 34-mers that vary by this dinucleotide here and come up with a specific DNA binding protein. Any questions about TALs? And then TALENs, similarly, you'll string a bunch of these together, and this is a much larger protein than the ZFNs, and link it to the FOC1 catalytic domain, and again, you can dial in a very specific nuclease that'll make a double strand break at your site of interest. Any questions about TALENs? All right, now the rest of the talk will be on the CRISPR-Cas system. CRISPR stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced